On this episode of The Playbook, I have Dr. Jen Welter, the first female coach ever in the NFL, and we talk about how the symptoms of excitement and anxiety have such a strong overlap. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have a dear friend here, and she is an incredible woman. She's an incredible athlete. And she also, Jen Welter, was the first woman NFL coach in history, an extraordinary person who is breaking barriers. And, you know, this office that you're in is about breaking barriers. We're about first. When I ran Lee Steinberg, it was always about first. And I look up on the wall today with you coming in, and I saw Marlon Briscoe, Doug Williams, Warren Moon. And last night, I was watching the game with Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick on the sideline. I took my son to that game, and I'm thinking to myself, when will the day come when, you know, it's just not like having a black quarterback? There were just quarterbacks out there. And now I want to see, I have three daughters, and I want to see them with the same options and opportunities that I was given as a kid that wasn't true. I don't think people give credit to Marlon Briscoe, Doug Williams, Warren Moon enough of how many chuckles, sneers, and laughs that they faced before people applauded them.
Yep.
And so I want to get down and dirty with you about the chuckles, sneers, and laughs, because this is an entrepreneur show, and I always say people are going to laugh at you, they're going to snicker at you, they're going to chuckle at you, and eventually they will applaud you.
I always say, you know, I've been called crazy my whole life, and I love my brand of crazy, because if somebody else sees
me. I'm quoting around that. I love my brand of crazy. I think that's the title of this podcast. I love my brand of crazy.
Well, I mean, but think about it. Like, if other people saw what you saw, they would have already done what you've done. And so if they can't see through your eyes, if they can't know your passion and your talent and your drive and your vision, then how could they imagine what it is that you are going to do? And so many times, unfortunately, what happens is you have a powerful vision or a great idea, and you tell it to somebody who knew, you know, through their experience says it's not possible, it's not what it is. And we have to remember that when they say those things, they're actually speaking through the scar tissue of their own heart, right? Their own experiences, and their, while they think that they're going to protect you from their experience, they're also kind of keeping you from the opportunity to really live your best life.
Yeah, I call that voting, right? I see so many people in life, they vote for what other people want for them. And a lot of other people we call, you know, friends and family, by the way, but other people that they want for us, and they all have really good intentions. Mm-hmm. They're either protecting you or they think they're elevating you, but don't vote for what other people want for you. And I really love the fact that you mentioned seeing things, because I believe, not to get too physical in physics about it, but, you know, there's this connectivity in the universe. I call it a quantum field or a quantum entanglement, that if you can't see it in your mind's eye, it's very, very, very rare it's going to happen. And so how can you expect to get anywhere that somebody else doesn't see if you don't see? And what does it take, though, because it's not over for you. You're young, you're on the journey, and there's still huge challenges with, you know, you have the girls' flag, and it's girls and boys, because you're the only one who allows boys to come to the girls' camp. But, you know, within the NFL, there's still a variety of barriers. Even though you were the first NFL woman coach, there's still all these barriers with companies, sponsorship, media. It's still not, you know, a norm, even though you were the first, that everyone's just embracing Jen Welter and saying, hey, yeah, you're great, and we want this to be a role model or a path which all people should take.
You know, I think one of the interesting things and the promise I've made to myself, having been a first now several times, is that the opportunity and the responsibility of being first is to ensure that you're not the last, right? Mm. A certain door that you open honestly, sometimes it's going to be hardest for you because, you know, you were the one who brought something to the forefront that they may or may not have been ready for or prepared for or even, you know, had a plan for. And so sometimes that person who's first gets, in fact, the most pushback. And yet what you have to realize is that there are a lot of ways to push forward. And sometimes in being outside the system, you can actually be the vocal advocate for change. Because you know as well as I do that, you know, it's different being somebody who's had experiences in and being in it and who can look out for like a movement in the sport overall, as opposed to, you know, somebody who's employed and has a job and bosses who may or may not see, you know, the same things that you do or see that, you know, diversity is a strength and that having additional voices are going to improve our business as a whole. You know, yeah. Even if you have some people who see it, doesn't mean that everybody will.
It's incredible. I'm sitting here and I have a thought. I don't normally ask this question, but I'm just curious because it came to me. What's your favorite movie? And there's a reason I'm asking. I'm not a setup guy.
You know, I have a few, and I think all of them impact us in slightly different ways. And if you said a few of them, I would be like, oh yeah, that, because that hits here or that.
Yeah. I'm gonna mention one that came to mind.
Yeah, but Rocky. I'm gonna give you. Yeah, Rocky is one. Absolutely.
I came to mind. I'm like, this girl is Rocky. Yeah, like you're the female Rocky. You've been knocked down. Like you've lived in your car. You literally have been told no by everybody. You know, physically knocked down too. I mean, you played running back for a professional men's team, mm-hmm. First woman ever to do that as well. And I played that position myself in college and returned kicks. And you know, I look at you going, I thought I was small.
but I know this 5'2" top height fools people all the time. I laugh because I'll meet people and they're like, you know, you kind of look like that coach, but she's a lot bigger than you are. And I'm like, all right, well, that's good to know.
I got that yesterday just to make you feel better. I got that yesterday. I had a woman on here, Bianca, on the playbook, and we took a picture. It's like, oh my God, you are much smaller in person. Like, I love that.
It's a saying I have, you know, in my mind, I'm XXL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In clothes, though. You can go ahead and get me a small.
Small, yes. Medium is what the boys wear around here. Mm-hmm. Facing adversity, though. You know, it's one thing to face physical adversity, you know, running through. And I know that pain, what it's like. And I tell people all the time, because I weighed 147 when I played. And they say, well, you don't the hits hurt? I said, it's not the hits, to be honest. It's everybody on top of me that was always the worst feeling. Like, because those guys are heavy. And when you get three or four of them on you and you weigh 147 pounds, that was always the only thing that I dreaded. But
thankfully, you know, for me, most of the time I was the one tackling. Right. And I was a rugby style tackler.
Yeah. You played rugby
form,
as well.
Yeah, I played that in college. So my form was a lot different. And my mentality was too. Knowing how small I was, I always made sure that no matter who I tackled, I'd be back up before they were. Mm-hmm. Because being so small, if I would have stayed down, they would have felt like they had the best of me. So I would always pop back up. And then something that they were particularly fond of, not really, was that I would make sure to lean back over to them and be like, hey, baby, do you need a hand up? Because I'm going to be here all day.
Nice.
And so they really did kind of think I was crazy. Yet I was really aware of all of the things that I was doing, not only in the play, but in between the plays, because knowing that I was underestimated from the jump by my size, I had to have a whole lot of crazy in my back pocket.
And that craziness is interesting because academically, your forte and specialty and expertise is in psychology, mm-hmm. and been utilized in the NFL, been utilized on all types of sports around the world. You're known as a sports psychologist at the top level, you know. How did that play into, you know, this craziness brand that you have? And I believe everyone's crazy. Some of us admit it and others don't. But you have studied crazy.
Yes.
How has that been leveraged in your own career?
I think it plays into everything that I do. understanding humans and human potential is a little bit different. And saying that, you know, when I say sports psychology, a lot of people think, oh, well, it just has to do with athletes. And it really doesn't. What it does is kind of focuses on the psychology of excellence and how that impacts all of the life things that we all have. For example, an athlete and injury. Regular person off the street gets a bad injury. It's bad, but it doesn't impact all areas of their life. Like psychologically, an athlete with a career-ending or threatening injury, the psychological impact is the death of a close family member.
Wow.
So how we view the world, I always say it's kind of like those funhouse mirrors, right? If you were walking through the old school fair, like everybody has their own vantage point for the funhouse mirrors. And what's larger than life to you might be easy to me. Right. And so psychology has helped me not only to formulate how I was going to approach the game, but knowing how to see myself through competitors' eyes and make some of those choices that I did to get up first, or, you know, as opposed to trying to talk smack to somebody where I might end up, you know, talking smack to their belly button because I'm short and it's not really intimidating. Kind of gets to be more funny. You know, I might like blow kisses at them instead. And I'd get a whole lot further with that because, you know, it was so far out of the norm.
Yeah.
So whether it was for myself or someone else, really the understanding of the individual to me is at the core of psychology and success as a coach, right? If I don't know you, how can I know how to approach you? How can I know where to get you to or even how to speak to you? And so for me, I always say I might be a coach, but I'm coachable. And I want to really understand the situation that I'm in. And, you know, if I was talking to an athlete or talking to you, I'd say, listen, if you can trust me enough to allow me the privilege of playing a game in your cleats or walking a mile in your shoes, I know I can help you. But if it's just me assuming I know you, then the best I'm doing is throwing darts at a board and they may hit and they may not. But it really does require a lot of trust. So whether it's helping somebody on the mental game or to take their physical game to the next level, which I would argue happen hand in hand, you know, you really have to have a level of trust for that person in order to allow them to make you better.
That's awesome. No. One of the things that's prevalent both in football and in life and in entrepreneurship is fear. And you seem like an expert as coach and coachable, playing, coaching, breaking, you know, barriers, which may be the most fearful. But I believe that life is about practicing ending fear. And the better we are at that, the less corrosion or interference that we have to the inspiration and love and light and happiness that is available to all of us. I would love to see or listen to your perception and lessons about how you deal with practicing ending fear.
You know, it's interesting because I think, yet again, just like the funhouse mirrors, everybody has a different view of, first of all, how they experience fear and what they fear. Right? For an athlete, an injury is catastrophic. For the average person off the street, they might say, you know, stepping onto the football field was catastrophic, right?
Right.
Like, and yet to an athlete, it's like breathing. So we want to understand first that we're not throwing everybody into the same bucket of how we look at the world and what's scary and what's not. Now, psychologically, one of the things we have to realize is that excitement and anxiety manifest the exact same physiological symptoms. So the difference is then how you take them and interpret them in their own life. For me personally, I know one of the things that I tell people is like, if you want to drive somebody crazy quick, take somebody who is in fight or flight mode, which fear is,
right,
and just tell them to relax. Like, I'm right here. I'm ready to run. I'm ready to jump. I'm ready to tackle. I'm ready to hide. And you're saying like deep breath and woosah. Your body is primed for something else. Your body's actually primed for action and you're telling it to just ignore it. And then what happens, right? You can't make it go away. So you're like, oh, oh my gosh, why can't I relax? What's wrong with me? Now I'm not only scared, but now I'm crazy and scared, yeah. right? And your breathing shortens and you really actually manifest more of those physiological symptoms because now you can't breathe,
right?
So I always tell people I would rather in a situation where I was nervous go sprint, go punch something, or go do something because that energy is there at your fingertips. You can feel it. Like even when if you take and you clench, right? Clench, clench, clench like this. Clench, clench, clench as much as you can till you can't anymore. And now exhale and release it. Feel how light your fingers just got?
Yeah.
You got a relaxation response through actually channeling the energy that you were holding in your body and letting it have a purpose as opposed to just saying that it wasn't right to have it, right? So
yeah, we're stopping it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then what you do is you allow yourself to experience the process, but then look at it as that energy isn't a negative. It's actually your body's way of telling you it's go time. Like, let's move. And so for me, like from a young age, and I think it sticks with me is, I remember, so my dad is, he has definitely had a big impact on me and how I think he is a legitimate Army hero. He was a recon medic in Vietnam. He was a Silver Star and 2 Bronze Stars. And as a kid, I was always fascinated with his Army stories. I still am. Record them on my phone. I'll have to let you listen to them sometimes. My dad's a movie in and of himself, no doubt, nice. Right? But I remember looking at him one time and I was like, Daddy, like, weren't you afraid when you were in the Army and everybody was trying to kill you? And he was like, no, Jenny, I wasn't. I was pissed off because they were trying to kill my friends and I was going to get them first.
Wow.
And I just remember thinking like, okay, so we're just not scared. And he'd also tell me stuff like, if you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough, right? Like you made that decision. You put yourself in this scenario. Now, what are you going to do about it? Like there was no empathetic, like, oh, I didn't know what to do. And then we're going to go tell a story. Like he would tell me these overarching stories and principles. And then as I got into situations, they really just figured out into how I thought about things. A great example is at a boat when I was a kid, and it wasn't necessarily mine. We were fishing family and we had a bigger boat and a small boat, and there was a storm in the Bahamas. I'm from Florida. So we were literally, you call it running back from a storm because you're going way faster than you probably would in this really tough sea if you didn't have to get the heck out of there because it was bad news. It's 8 to 10 foot seas. I mean, it's rough out there. And my boat, which is being towed back, breaks off the big boat. And I just looked at it. And I jumped in the water and I swam to the boat and I got on. I was like, it's my boat. Like, it's my responsibility. I just got to do this. And all of a sudden, my dad's on the bigger boat, which, has sonar and all that stuff. Yeah. Right. So you can put it on autopilot. And my mom was on there and she could do it. So was one of his buddies. But all of a sudden you see my dad jump in the water and swim over to the boat too. And he's like, Jenny, why did you do that? And I was like, Daddy, you said it was my boat. Like, this is my responsibility. He's like, all right, I guess we're in this one together. Right. But there is just, I think when there is a matter of fact of like, you just have to operate, it doesn't mean there's not some fear there.
Yeah.
But what is that fear? And are you putting it in the same category of everybody else? And can you challenge yourself to realize that it might just be a little bit of excitement? Like that, this could be so good that you may not even know how to handle how good it's going to be. And that's why you're ready, right? It doesn't always have to be a negative that you feel that energy ready to go.
Certainly. And one of the things I keep hearing as a common theme in your life is controlling your own perspective. Mm-hmm. And I always talk about perspective is everything. And I practice myself getting back to center, controlling, not allowing people to steal my joy. What are some of the tips that you have given athletes, people, girls at the camp about having the right perspective?
Well, it's interesting on mindset, right? with my players, even in the NFL, I used to tell them that I wanted the voice in their head to be mine. Every single one of us goes through those times where we just don't have it or we doubt ourselves. Some days you're going to feel like you could run a marathon. Other days you will leap tall buildings in a single bound. And some days the best you've got is to shuffle in slippers. Right? Let's just be straight up honest about that. I hate when people think that motivation is a constant. It's not. It's not. There are days.
You and I can disagree.
But look, there are days when it's harder than others.
You're always connected. Yes, because there's more interference or corrosion to that, right?
But
you're always connected.
Right. But shuffling in slippers means you didn't quit. You just may not be going as fast.
I see what you're saying.
As you could have.
Right.
But you're kind of figuring it out. Sometimes recharging will actually ramp you up to being better, but you didn't quit, right?
Yeah.
So I always used to tell the guys when things were going on, and funny enough, this got into a discussion, but that I wanted them to hear this voice, and they would like trip out about my raspy voice. They're like, it's not even that loud, but I could pick it out anywhere, coach.
You and Demi Moore, right?
Right? And so the guys, one day I walked into practice, and they were talking about which X-Man they would be.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, so which one am I? And they're like, oh, that's so easy. Coach, you're totally Dr. Jean Grey, right? That raspy voice, we can hear it always. You've got that mind control over all of us. And we all know the Phoenix is in there and none of us wants to meet her,
yeah.
Right? So kind of that mind power is really important in realizing that you have control over it, right? Your mind can actually technically only hold one thought at a time. Now it switches back and forth. Don't get me wrong, but some of the best competitors are the ones who can get their mind back faster to the place that it needs to be at. Doesn't mean it won't have one of those thoughts, but your ability to get it back on track and focused in the moment on what's important is your recovery. And it's often what people refer to when they say, you know, it's mental toughness. Mental toughness isn't something you were born with. It's something that you train just like anything else. So knowing that you can really only hold one thought at a time, one of my favorite tricks is music. Have a theme song. Find those different songs that get you in a certain mindset. Like, I don't care how cranky you were, how tired you were, how whatever it was, that certain song comes on and you feel like yeah, like, let's go. Like, you're like, oh, I got this. Have that song on and have it in a place, whether it's on your phone or something, that you can call on that energy anytime. Because no matter how much you try and resist it, like, you know, you start nodding your head. And that's a beautiful thing because your mind and your body are innately connected. And there is real, like, there's something to fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
It's not just like something that you say. It's like, you know, if I'm looking at you and you have the body posture you do, I know you're confident, you're actually mirroring me, you're reaching in, like, and I have a certain take that I'm going to get from that. Now, if you were to sit back and you were to put your head down and you were to slouch, I would interpret in my mind certain things about you, right? It would change slightly. Well, just like my mind interprets certain things about you, it will in turn interpret things about me by the way my body is being held, right? There's a reason why prisoners, they make it so they can't stand up straight, right? You're not only just breaking their posture, but you're breaking their mental fortitude and posture as well. So get up, get your dance shoes on, hold your head high, and let the song play. Because before you know it, you'll start to buy into the music. And you might have multiple theme songs, right, for multiple days. And that's where you'll see so many athletes, and they may not even realize that they're doing it, but they have their playlist.
Yep.
And the playlist is really designed to get you to that mental place where you perform the best. And that's
awesome.
An easy trick.
Well, that is awesome. I love we only try to get back to that one thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can only have one thought. That's an extraordinary takeaway.
It's not what just happened. It's not what's going to happen next. It's not what's who's watching. It's not the weather, right? It's not the call that the ref just made. What are you going to do right now in this one moment to be successful. And the more you can be focused in that, that's where you find concentration. That's where you find joy. That's where you find the zone and all of these things. Like, people who know me know that, like, sometimes it might come off as, like, you know, being short, but, like, when I'm here with you, like,
you're tall.
Right, exactly. But it's nothing else right now is the most important thing. This conversation, me and you, is the most important thing. When I'm coaching an athlete or coaching a kid, those are the most important things. And trying to minimize the distraction and the focus, and then being able to, if you're a person with a lot of demands, being able to shift gears and then fully concentrate and fully be immersed in an experience as well, will allow you to perform better in everything that you do. And also, with everyone that you engage with, they'll know how important they are to you too.
Yeah. Last question real quickly. Because we both are present, right? And we're hyper-focused, and we teach that and we practice it and all the other things that come along with it. It's hard for people to reconcile how we set goals or look into the future, because we are hyper-focused on what our activity is right now. Real quickly, what do you see next for yourself? I mean, you've done so many firsts and so many extraordinary things, from being the first NFL woman coach to playing men's football as a running back to the college rugby itself. As you know, when you played, it wasn't, you know, as chic as it is now, and right. You broke the barriers for that. What is next for Jen Welter?
You know, David, interesting. I probably look at some of the goals as a little bit different than a lot of people do.
Because you're crazy.
I am crazy. But also, having been the first so many times, you know, typically the model of gold settings tells us, like, go big and break it down with the individual components. Well, when there hasn't been a ceiling, right, or there's not a clear path to say, you know, I want to graduate college, yeah, and it's going to take me 4 years. Well, I did it fast. It's going to take me 3. I partied a little bit much. It's going to take me 5. But, you know, it's kind of close, right? I mean, those formulas are there. For me, I haven't necessarily had the opportunity to have those clear formulaic goals, because most of the things that I've done in the future have yet to be written. So what I've kind of come to instead, or as a good supplemental way to keep moving, is to focus on compounding greatness. First of all, like, I never wanted to be stuck in the rearview mirror saying that, you know, this is what I was, right? Like Al Bundy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
4 touchdowns at Polk High, right? Like, I still don't want that. I still fear that. That probably drives me. That's probably the fear for me, is like that old picture of Al Bundy and like wearing the high school jacket or something. But I try to look at how I can build on greatness and then expand the way of thinking that all fits together. So for me, for example, we talk about football. I realized it's not just a goal of, say, coaching in the NFL. It's changing the perspectives surrounding girls and women in football in general, and football being a medium to do that. Right. Like,
yep,
they always said football was the final frontier for women in sports. So I took that as a challenge that if we could change football, we could change the world. So to me, it doesn't start and end through football, but what a great place to create change, because it's this place that traditionally girls and women have been shown.
Excluded. Right. Yeah.
And told that they didn't belong, or they were wrong for liking it. And so now I look at a lot of the ways in which we can look more holistically to create opportunities. So you mentioned the girls camps that I do. That was something that bothered me. Nobody was teaching the girls. And so I say it's confidence through football and teaching the girls that there's no game they cannot play and no field they do not belong in or on.
I love,
right,
that.
So we're
using, say that one more time, just,
yeah. So we're that. Using football to teach a lesson for life, and that's what it should always be. Is that, you know, people say sports have a power to change the world. They do, but we really do need to intentionally connect the dots, because not all experiences are great ones. But when we start that we want to instill confidence through doing sports, then the approach is also different. So my camps and everybody I come into contact with them, and this is a way I can be, you know, kind of down in the trenches, get my hands dirty, and I adore kids. So it's fun because I am a big kid at heart, and well, not even a big kid, really.
Kind of little kid at heart.
Kind of a smallish kid. I mean, there are 10-year-olds bigger than me now.
Me too. Don't feel bad.
Right. I look at them now, and I'm like, how old are you, 20? And they're like, 10. I'm like, dang it.
Yeah.
Right?
I got feet like this big.
Right. Yeah. But as I say, they're, you know, we're teaching them through football that there is no game you cannot play and no field you do not belong in or on.
And that applies to everyone, which is one reason I love esports as well, as we were talking. Well, this was better than I even anticipated. I knew it was going to be extraordinary. But if you're not going back and listening to some of these lessons that Jen Welter has taught and lived, you're making a big mistake, because I'm trying to remember them right now. So I'm going to have to go back and watch this before it's even edited, if they edit it. But Jen, man, thank you so much for coming down. Incredible. The incredible first, Jen Welter, the first woman NFL coach ever, and also my dear friend and mentor, just serving up the lessons here with Dave Meltzer on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.